Welcome back. Today's show brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. Stock up now for the holidays and get those gift cards at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. All right, bottom of the hour, Bucknell Merrimack basketball with Doug Birdsong. Between now and then, chance to sit down and talk with the outstanding Ray Dittinger. Ray, welcome back. Great to have you with us, my friend.
Happy to be with you, Steve. Best wishes to you, too.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it. So they're going to do a 30 for 30 on Reggie White. I will assume that you will play a prominent role in it.
Yeah, I do.
Yeah. All right. He's interesting because he is one of those guys. He comes out of Tennessee, and he goes to the USFL, then eventually to Philadelphia. What was the part of the story that you wanted to tell about him and the angle they wanted to take with you about him?
Well, the show is produced by it's a joint effort of the ESPN and NFL Films, and it's built a lot of it is built around an interview I did with Reg back when I was still working at NFL Films, and this was like 2 years after he had actually retired, and it sort of starts off with an outtake from the interview that I did with Reggie at his home. He was living down in the Carolinas then, where he was talking about that point in his life where he was kind of reassessing his role in religion, or more specifically, religion's role in his life, and asking a lot of questions about his religion and his commitment to the religion and what he really understood about the faith, and did he really understood the gospel that he was preaching. And it was a period of really deep self introspection on Reggie's part, and it wasn't at all the interview that I expected to get when we went down there, but he took us in a whole different direction, talking about what he wanted to do and the things he felt like he still had to learn, lessons he was trying to learn, the language he wanted to learn so that he could read and speak actual Hebrew, and he was taking these lengthy classes with an Israeli scholar. I mean, he was really at a very different point in his life, and so that's kind of what this film is about. It's a beautiful look. It's a two-hour film, and it's a beautiful look at Reggie's all the aspects of Reggie. But it really begins with this point in his life, where he's really kind of taking a step back and trying to reassess his own role in religion and how he can get to the point where he could be a true living kind of a contemporary apostle, going out and preaching the message the way he wants to preach it.
You know, it's interesting that that's what you ended up with, because when I did a sit down with him, it was about 15, 20 minutes. And so you go in, and I'm not usually a person that writes down questions because I've got a feel as to where I want to go with it. And when I asked the first question and he went down this road, I had to change mentally everything I wanted to talk to him about, because he did the same thing with me, that he wanted to talk about this. So when you sat down to do that, what kind of changes did you have to make in your approach, because that's what he wanted to talk about?
It was different. I mean, we were doing a show. The idea was that we were going to do a show at NFL Films on religion and football.
Okay.
And because there was a lot of conversation about, you know, the players on the field kneeling and praying before the games and after the games. There was a lot of controversy about whether it was appropriate or not. And so we wanted to do a whole half-hour show about religion and football and how the two can coexist, and the people who think it's a great thing and the people who think it should be gone. And we figured we couldn't very well do a show about religion and football without talking to Reggie, because, I mean, he was really kind of the face of it. So we set up the interview down in this home in outside of Charlotte, and it was kind of like what you just said, Steve. I mean, you know, I asked the first couple questions, and Reggie just took me down this whole other path where he was talking about, you know, I've reached a point now where, you know, I'm taking a hard look at the religion and all the things that I've been saying and all the preaching, quote unquote, that I've been doing in churches all these years. I've come to the conclusion that, you know, I've just been repeating what other people have said and you know, things that I have read, and, you know, I need to kind of find my own place in religion and find out what's real, and so that I can go out and deliver this message with my whole heart and soul. And it was it was really eye opening, and he just talked. Geez, we talked for about 4 hours that day. Mm. I mean, we used up every bit of film that we brought with us,
yeah.
And Reggie was just warming up. But that's where he was at that point. And the real tragedy of it is that 2 months later he was gone.
Right.
I mean, we did the interview in October, and Reggie passed away in December.
Yeah. Did you address, and I'm going to guess in 4 hours it came up, that line between I'm going to level a quarterback, oh, and by the way, I'm going to hug him later.
You know,
and how did he address that with you?
Oh, now that was one thing that we had dealt with right from the beginning. I mean, right from the time he came to Philadelphia. Because he was the ordained minister, and he was literally preaching in churches, and he was an assistant pastor at a church. So, I mean, this wasn't just something that he talked about, maybe down the road I'll get into religion. No, he was into it really deep. And so we obviously had to ask the questions, how do you reconcile being a man of faith and, you know, a man who preaches the gospel, and a guy who goes out and wreaks havoc on Sundays, you know? And he said it wasn't that hard at all. He said, you know, his feeling was that if I go out and I play the game fairly and I play the game clean, and I'm not out there trying to hurt anybody, that's okay. You know, and the game is the game, and, you know, will people get hurt? Yeah, probably. But if I'm just out there playing by the rules, which he always did, I mean, Reggie was never a dirty player. No one ever accused him of being that. Then he thought that was okay. And he also saw the trade-off here was that if he was really a good player, which clearly he was,
yeah.
His visibility would give him a greater platform to preach the message that he really wanted to preach, which was about faith and about the Lord and, you know, living your life the right way and all that stuff. The better he was as a player, the more all-pro teams he made, the more Defensive Player of the Year awards he got, the more big fourth-quarter sacks that he got, you know, the more people would want to come and talk to him, and he would be able to get that message out there. So he kind of thought the two went hand in hand.
He started out professionally with the Memphis Showboats in the USFL, and then he went to Philadelphia after that. What did, you know, in any of the conversations you had, and you had many with him over the years, what did the Memphis experience mean to him, and did he come to the league maybe a slightly better product because of it?
He didn't talk a whole lot about the USFL. I mean, other than the fact that it gave him a start,
yeah.
He always spoke well of the USFL, and he always was very. He would get very irritated if people would sort of, in their questioning, suggest that the USFL was a minor league or that it wasn't very good,
right?
Or that it was, you know, very inferior to the NFL. Obviously, no one was saying it was the NFL. Nobody would say that. But there was the idea that it was sort of a Mickey Mouse operation. Mm-hmm. And Reggie took umbrage at that. You know, Reggie said, that's not true. I mean, we played good football there. And look at how many players from the USFL came over to the NFL and were big-time players, which was true. I mean, a lot of the USFL guys came over and really played well in the National Football League. Reggie, I guess, was the best, but there were a lot of other guys that did. So Reggie talked a lot about that, about those years, how much he enjoyed. He felt that he grew up over there. He thought that he matured a lot from his time at Tennessee during a couple years when he played in the USFL and honed his skills. But, I mean, by the time he came to Philadelphia, there were some questions when he got here about just how good he was,
sure,
because he was dominating in the USFL, but it was sort of like, okay, well, that's the USFL.
Right.
Can he be that same kind of player in the NFL? And it didn't take very long. I mean, his very first game with the Eagles, coming in on midweek, I mean, he played that Sunday and he had 2.5 sacks and tipped a pass that was intercepted and returned for a touchdown in a game against the Giants. That was his first game.
Yeah.
With like 3 days of practice. And that's when everybody said, well, I guess everything we heard about him is true.
Yeah, no, exactly. Because it's interesting, if you ever talk to anybody who played in the AFL or the ABA or even the WHA, there's almost like a kinship that they have. Joe Namath will tell you nothing but great things about the AFL.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, there's something about it, the fact that they all went through it, that I think is a something that bonds people.
I think you're 100% right, and the AFL is a really good example of that. And you mentioned the perfect guy, and that was Namath. Namath told me a great story that when the Jets won Super Bowl III, when they beat the Colts in that ridiculous set that no one saw coming. The Jets are 19-point underdogs to the Colts, and they beat them down in the Orange Bowl in the big upset that Joe Namath guaranteed. Mm-hmm. Namath told me that when the Jets team bus got back to their hotel in Fort Lauderdale, they were staying at the Gold Ocean Mile in Fort Lauderdale. When the Jets team buses got back to the hotel, there were like 20 Kansas City Chiefs waiting for them to congratulate them and hug them and say how much they were all at the game and how much that meant to them to see the Jets win that game, because they obviously won it for the Jets, they won it for New York, but to these guys, they had gone out and they had won it for the AFL. So when the Jets got back to the hotel, the Chiefs were waiting for them and they all celebrated together.
Reggie ends up being the guy that goes free agent, and I feel like he changed the trajectory of free agency because he A, got the money, and B, went to the smallest market in the league and made the smallest market in the league seem like the biggest place to go. What did that move mean for the players and also for the league that he did it?
It meant everything. You look back on that, and I mean, it was an immense thing when they brought the suit. They brought the suit to against the league mm-hmm. to earn free agency.
Yep, yep.
Reggie was the guy whose name was on it. Reggie is the guy whose face was on it. And I mean, you had to be a pretty brave guy to go out to be the guy out front of that movement, taking on the National Football League. But Reggie believed what Reggie believed. I mean, Reggie was a guy who lived his life by a certain standard. And in some ways, he got him in trouble. I mean, there were some things in society that he just couldn't understand, that he didn't approve of, and he was not afraid at speaking out about them. He was a man of his convictions. And this to him was about more than money. It was about what was right or wrong, and his belief that a man should have freedom to be able to pick and choose where he wants to go, and he shouldn't necessarily be bound to one team and one contract for his entire career. And so Reggie was the guy that was willing to step out front and take on that fight, and of course they won it. And you're right, I think that no one saw that coming, that Reggie, with all the offers that he had, and he had offers from everybody, that he would go to Green Bay, the smallest market, you know, no advertising, no commercials, no other endorsements or anything. But he believed in the people there. He hit it off with Mike Holmgren and the people in Green Bay. He saw that Milwaukee was a city right down the road that had a lot of problems and a really tough inner city situation, and he felt like he could help there. And he just felt like that was the place for him. And it changed everything. It certainly changed the direction of the Green Bay Packers, because all of a sudden, you know, Reggie White is willing to go to Green Bay and play. Geez, other free agents would say, well, you know, maybe I should go there too. And they did. And it wasn't long after Reggie got there that, indeed, the Green Bay Packers went to the Super Bowl and won it.
And he had, I think, 2.5 sacks in that Super Bowl against the Patriots. He was outstanding in that game.
Actually, they credited him with three.
Three.
And that was the record, the Super Bowl record at the time, and I think it still may be today.
It may very well be today. I have to ask you about the current season. There are certainly some really good teams, Eagles, Niners, Cowboys are getting better, but there's a lot of 6-7 and 7-6 teams that are playoff eligible right now. What is your impression of the league that we're watching right now in the NFL?
It pains me to say it. I don't think it's very good, Steve.
I just don't think
the quality of play is very good. I think there's just a lot of mediocrity out there. I think the officiating is dreadful.
Yes.
And I think on a week in and week out basis, it's I hate to use the term, but I just don't think it's a good product. You know, and I've tried to put my finger on it. Look, it's kind of served the Eagles well. Yeah. Because I don't think this is a great Eagles team by any means.
I agree.
But the fact that there are so many tomato cans out there that it allowed the Eagles to get out to that 10-1 start. And yeah, as much as they've stumbled the last couple of weeks, I mean they're a lock for the playoffs. Right. So they're going to get into the postseason and they'll have their shot. But I don't think they're a particularly good team. But you know, you look around the league, and there's just not many of them. And I try to kind of put my finger on it, and I don't know that this is exactly what it is, but this is the way it looks to me. Is I think the offensive line play in the NFL is really bad.
I agree.
I think one of the things you look at from when I watch the film, I just watch the offensive line play, and it is really bad. And so you have a lot of really poor offensive lines protecting a lot of young quarterbacks, rookies and second-year quarterbacks, backup quarterbacks, third-string quarterbacks. They're now playing behind bad offensive lines. Well, you're not going to get good football if you have third-string quarterbacks playing behind bad offensive lines. It's going to look like what it looks like, and that's kind of where we are right now. Now, you look at the teams that are really good, and you mentioned them. You look at the 49ers. They're playing great, and their offensive line is really good, and Purdy is an MVP candidate.
Yeah, yeah.
And the Cowboys, same thing. Their offensive line is really good, yeah. And Dak's having his best season. But that's what sort of set them apart from everybody else. The other teams are just kind of in a big muddle, and I just don't know that there's going to be many surprises in the postseason. I mean, I don't know if anybody's going to jump up and beat one of those top teams. To me, the top teams look to me like they're going to go all the way.
That's why the last 2 weeks, to me, the Eagles play, and I know the Eagles didn't win either game, but the Eagles play the 49ers. To me, that was much must-watch TV. Eagles play Dallas. That was must-watch TV. There's no other game I'm out there watching saying it's must watch. I'm just kind of watching to watch.
Yeah, it's really true. It's really true. I mean that recent Thursday night game with Pittsburgh and New England was just it was terrible.
Oh.
It was terrible. I mean if that had been an XFL game, people would have been laughing at it, saying, "Oh, come on, you're kidding me. You're going to tell me this is professional football?" That's what it looked like. That's how bad it was. But again, I think if you look at that game, I mean, it was wrong. It was bad for a million different reasons.
Yes.
But it really started with bad offensive line play and bad quarterbacking. And the thing is, that's just not an isolated case. I mean, that's all over the league right now. And it's dragging down the whole level of play. And then compounding it all is the officiating, which I think this year has been worse than it's ever been.
Yeah. Agree on all fronts. Ray, thanks so much for your time. This Reggie White project sounds like it's going to be phenomenal. Really looking forward to it. And I thank you, as always, for your time.
Always a pleasure to be with you, Steve. And yeah, I tell folks to definitely find that the Reggie Show. It's called The Minister of Defense. It's this installment of 30 for 30. It's on ESPN right now, and you'll be able to find it. And it's really, really good. I mean, the 30 for 30 series is an excellent series,
yes.
But and the bar is set pretty high. But believe me, this moves it up a few more notches.
Yeah, it sounds like it's one of those that takes a great series, which it is, and advances it. So that's phenomenal. Right.
Yep.
Right, thank you.
Thank you. All right, Steve, always a pleasure. Talk to you soon.
You too. The Hall of Famer Ray Dinninger. Bucknell Basketball with Doug Birdsong next, here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.